Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven true crime channel on the entire internet. Let's get straight to the docket. First, Ghislaine Maxwell wants to go home. Second, William Roddy Bryant wants to go home. Third, well, that stay of execution didn't last very long. Fourth, I told you that they would find them. Fifth, a man released after a wrongful conviction because of junk science. Don't try to be the cool parents. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for tuning in. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask you please hit the subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Now, before we get to the docket today, first, we told you about this last night on our live, but there is a website out there called FeedSpot, FeedSpot.com. And they are saying that Crime Talk with Scott Reich is the top 20, it falls in within the top 20 criminal law podcasts that you must follow in 2021. Well, you're already here, so thank you, but tell a friend and check out FeedSpot. No promotion, just telling you, they thought that we're worthy of listening to. I tend to agree. All right. First on the docket today, Ghislaine Maxwell wants to go home. As you may recall, Ghislaine Maxwell put together a bail package for the court to consider. It totaled $28.5 million. But the problem of most of that was with a personal recognizance bond and only a few million bucks of maybe your husband, not really your husband, putting up a few bucks. And then she was going to hire a private security force to protect her, kind of like the fox protecting the hen house, so to speak. Needless to say, the court denied that motion. Well, guess what? Ghislaine Maxwell is going to appeal. And for an appeal to be successful, there has to be some legal error that was made that resulted basically in an unfair hearing, or that the court's decision was arbitrary and capricious. Basically, they just made it up. As long as it was founded in the law and supported by the facts, guess what? The appeal is going to be denied, and Ghislaine Maxwell is going to remain in custody. Judge Nathan, the trial court judge, found and concluded that none of the new information that the defendant presented in support of her application has a material bearing on the court's determination that she poses a flight risk. The court stated further, for substantially the same reasons as the court determined that detention was warranted at the initial bail hearing, the court again concludes that no conditions of release can reasonably assure the defendant's appearance at future proceedings. Right? We have talked about this before. The fundamental principle that relates to the law of bail is that the judge has a duty to protect the community and make sure that the bail is high enough to make sure that the defendant will not flee, i.e., is there enough holding them there, i.e., if you lose, for example, if you leave the country, they're going to take all your property or the property of your friends that put up the collateral. The court said here, there is no combination or condition that the court felt comfortable with releasing Ms. Maxwell. I anticipate that the appellate courts will deny her appeal promptly. Now, for those of you who have been waiting, yes, Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell has been in custody now 196 days, which comes out to 6 months and 12 days. And for those keeping score at home, that's 28 weeks, 4,704 hours, and 282,240 minutes. What a lot of people don't realize, and sometimes it's a very difficult conversation you have to have with your client, is that you need to get comfortable with your new reality, and that your new reality is you're going to remain in custody, and if you are convicted, you're going to stay in prison for a long time. Miss Ghislaine Maxwell needs to hear that conversation, and very, very soon. Next on the docket, William Roddy Bryant. Right? You remember him. He was the third gentleman arrested as it relates to the case of Ahmaud Arbery down in Georgia. That's right. He was the one that videotaped the incident and then turned it over to his attorney, and the attorney turned it over to a radio station, which was basically enough evidence to lock all three of the individuals involved related to the death of Ahmaud Arbery into custody. I sure hope that attorney had permission of Mr. Brian to release that. Otherwise, he could be in some big, big trouble. Needless to say, that's right, just like Miss Maxwell, Mr. Brian wants to go home. Apparently, Mr. Brian has uncontrolled high blood pressure since his arrest and detention last year, despite the fact that he is receiving treatment at the detention center. He's already seen, apparently, a cardiologist and is medicated, but the sporadic checks of his blood pressure regularly reflect blood pressure in excess of 180 over 100. As recently as December 30th, apparently it's been as high as 190 over 100. Now, I'm not sure if this is going to get much play from the judge because he's being seen and treated at the jail facility. Normally, the jail likes to get rid of individuals if they have severe medical issues, and it costs them money. Why? That's right. The jail has to pay for it. But here, they're probably giving some generic drugs, monitoring his blood pressure. They're doing all that they can do. Lots of times, people think that their medical conditions are enough to get them out of jail pre-trial, or maybe a reduced sentence post-trial and sentencing, but the reality of it is they will receive medical treatment while they're in custody. Probably not great, but they will receive it. I had a client once who was released rather quickly because he needed open heart surgery. Ultimately, he got the surgery, and then they wanted him out of custody as quickly as possible. Maybe that's what will happen with Mr. Bryant. We'll let you know how that turns out for him. Next on the docket. Well, that sure was a short stay of execution. As you may recall, yesterday, a district court granted a stay of execution for Lisa Montgomery. She was the only woman on federal death row and was going to be the first female executed in a federal prison since 1953. The court granted that stay, but it ultimately went through the appellate courts rather quickly, and ultimately the Supreme Court said, go ahead. She was executed last night and pronounced dead at 1:30 a.m. after receiving a dose of a lethal injection at the Terre Haute, Indiana Federal Prison Complex. As you may recall from yesterday's report, Ms. Montgomery's attorneys said that she was not competent and therefore she should not be executed. Apparently, as the curtain was raised in the execution chamber, Montgomery looked momentarily bewildered as she glanced at journalists peering at her from behind the thick glass. As the execution process began, a woman standing over Montgomery's shoulder leaned over gently, removed Montgomery's face mask, and asked her if she had any last words. She responded, no. Ms. Montgomery's attorney stated that the government stopped at nothing in its zeal to kill this damaged and delusional woman, and that Ms. Montgomery's execution was far from justice. And for those of you who do not know what Ms. Montgomery was convicted of, she killed 23-year-old Bobby Joe Stinnett in Northwest Missouri in 2004. She used a rope to strangle Stinnett, who was 8 months pregnant, and then cut the baby girl from the womb with a kitchen knife. Montgomery took the child with her and attempted to pass the girl off as her own. Montgomery's legal team says she suffered sexual torture, including gang rapes as a child, permanently scarring her emotionally and exacerbating mental health issues that ran in her family. The prosecutors have stated that Ms. Montgomery is faking mental illness, noting that her killing of Stinnett was premeditated and included meticulous planning, including online research of how to perform a C-section. The last woman executed by the federal government was Bonnie Brown Heady, on December 18th, 1953 for kidnapping and murder of a six-year-old boy in Missouri. The last woman executed by a state was Kelly Gissendaner, 47, on September 30th, 2015 in Georgia. She was convicted of murder in 1997 for slaying of her husband after she conspired with her lover, who stabbed Douglas, her husband, to death. Next on the docket, I told you that they would find them. Remember the six men that escaped from the jail over the weekend using a makeshift rope? The authorities have already found three of them, and the other three will be found shortly. I told you that escape is one of the dumbest crimes that one can commit because they are going to find you, particularly if you are considered armed and dangerous, as these six individuals were considered. And on top of that, not only do you have the case that held you in custody, you now have a new case of escape, which will more than likely be consecutive to whatever case you were doing. And guess what? When you go to prison, you're going to be considered a management risk, and your quality of life in custody is going to suck because you are probably going to be considered an escape risk. Well, because you've shown that you are, and therefore you'll probably be in conditions that you do not like. Just another reason not to escape. You're going to get caught, and it's going to affect your lifestyle while in prison. You won't be in general population. Next on the docket, a man released after a wrongful conviction because of junk science. Eddie Lee Howard was sentenced to death in 1994 after being wrongfully convicted for the murder and rape of an 84-year-old woman. He was convicted in Columbus, Mississippi. Howard was initially tied to the crime by a doctor who compared bite marks on Kemp's body to Howard's teeth. But in August, the Mississippi Supreme Court recognized that bite mark comparison were not enough to tie him to the murder and stated that an individual perpetrator cannot be reliably identified through bite mark identification. As a result, the case was reversed and remanded. Howard was released from Mississippi death row in December and was exonerated last week by the Innocence Project. It's too bad that it took 20 years for the Mississippi Supreme Court to say that bite mark identification is junk science. There is a lot of junk science that has been perpetrated over the years to gain convictions. Bite mark identification is one of them. This shows the court should be the gatekeeper anytime the prosecution or defense wants to introduce scientific evidence based upon some sort of expert testimony. And the court shouldn't give any credence to anything that cannot be recreated, duplicated, and verified by independent individuals. That's called science. Bite mark identification is not a science. And over the years, we have gotten rid of lots of things that they use for identification purposes. For example, we used to identify people by the shape and sizes of their head. Fingerprint identification will one day also more than likely go away. If you know anything about fingerprint identification, is the people that do the examination are never wrong. Because if they don't create a match, it's not a match. But they won't tell you if they ever got anything wrong. I have a real problem with some of these shady fingerprint examiners over the years. I think eventually we're going to look back and say not sufficient, particularly in regards to DNA evidence, which can exclude people. And fingerprint evidence will more than likely not even be considered in the next 20 years. So anyway, our hats off to Mr. Howard. Sorry he had to spend the last 20 years in custody for a crime that, well, according to now, he didn't commit. Next on the docket, don't try to be the cool parents. A Florida couple has been arrested after repeatedly providing their 17-year-old babysitter with marijuana and alcohol over the course of 2 years. Adam Thayer and Misty Mitchell Thayer were arrested on child neglect charges last week. The police investigation began on December 26 after receiving a report that the pair were giving marijuana and alcohol to their babysitter and her underage friends at their residence. The Thayers allegedly gave their babysitters alcohol and marijuana between 30 to 40 times over the course of 2 years. The babysitter was 15 when she started caring for the couple's five-year-old twin children. The children are now 7. She reportedly admitted to being intoxicated while watching the children and that her speech was slurred and her vision was blurry. The juvenile babysat for the Thayers and consumed alcoholic beverages while the Thayers were out at local bars and consuming alcohol beverages themselves. The Thayers would usually return home after midnight, according to police statements. But wait, there's more. According to the police reports, the couple would then come home and drink alcohol with the babysitter. They allegedly also let the teen invite her friends over so that they can drink and become intoxicated as well. There's text messages which say, quote, "Get drunk, pass the fuck out, and if you want to smoke, Adam has weed there. Next time you want to be the cool parent, don't put it in a text message." And wait, just when you thought there couldn't be another twist to this, that's right. Mr. Thayer is the Dean of Students at the Peneus Academy for Math and Science. Needless to say, the school where Mr. Thayer worked is informing all of the parents of his arrest, and they are working on pursuing disciplinary action. Rule of thumb, ladies and gentlemen, if you provide illegal things, i.e. drugs, alcohol, marijuana, cigarettes, you may be the cool parent for a little while, but eventually it will catch up with you. And if somebody, and the way these things normally come out, is that somebody gets sick, passes out, God forbid, dies, they do the investigation, they prosecute the person that provided the alcohol and drugs to them. Guess what? There's a crime called contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And simply by providing something to a minor that is illegal, is that charge, it is a felony. So maybe you're the cool parent, the cool babysitters, whatever, but at the end of the day, you are committing a crime. Don't do it. Not worth it. I have had cases where people have bought alcohol, given it to juveniles. The juveniles then drank it, became intoxicated, drove, killed people. And guess what? The juvenile's in big trouble, but so is the person that provided the alcohol or drugs to them. Don't do it. As we have mentioned many times before, you need to know and find out with whom you are dealing with in the world. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. When you do, you will be able to anonymously search as many people as you would like. They're never going to know you did it unless you tell them. And while you wait, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is prepared for you that you can email to yourself, you can download it. But the bottom line is you're going to get valuable information. That information is going to include information on the person that you searched, their social media presence, their emails, their phone numbers that they use. You're going to get criminal history records, property records, divorce records, civil judgments, everything you want to know about an individual that's going to be coming into your life. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Remember the videos we put up a couple of weeks ago where the people were trying to break into the gun store and they threw the brick and it flew right back at them? Maybe Frank, you could play that video real quick. They pull up to this gun store where they think that they're going to get inside by throwing bricks at the window. And look where the brick hits the gentleman when it ricochets off the window. Ouch, that's gonna hurt right there in the groin. Well, I kinda wish we had video for this guy, Scott Massa. He allegedly broke a window, dumped a bucket of accelerant into the residence that he was attempting to light on fire. Something went horribly wrong and he set himself on fire. He escaped the scene and the police actually caught up with him at the Tampa St. Joseph's Hospital where he was in the burn unit, and he remains there right now. So it must have been quite a burn, to say the least. It's unclear who the owner was of the property that Mr. Massa was trying to burn down, but he obviously burned himself quite badly. I have an idea, Mr. Massa. Don't burn things. You don't burn down houses, all right? That's a crime, even if it's your house. Don't do it. You're probably going to burn it down for, like, I don't know, insurance money. That's a crime. If it's not yours, that's a crime. Needless to say, attempting to do that is attempted arson. But you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. And Mr. Massa, if you are found to be our dumb criminal contestant of the week, and you are a strong contender, that's right, you will receive a Crime Talk mug. We will send it to you. We will put it in nice, soft bubble wrap so that you don't have to ignite anything to get it out of the box. I'm telling you, we'll make it as easy as possible. We don't want you to harm yourself, and you may want to be able to, you could pour cool liquids over it in case for your burns. You know what I mean? You may have legal troubles coming your way, Mr. Massa, but don't worry. Bigger and better things are coming to you if you are the dumb criminal contestant winner of the week. Congratulations. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Please do not forget to subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. We would certainly appreciate it. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.